Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on drought in America when we come back. You know, once in a while we get a glimpse of the real world through the eyes of an insider like John Swinton, who was the guest of honor at a banquet given to him by leaders of his craft, and someone who knew neither the press nor Swinton offered a toast to the independent press. Well, Swinton outraged his colleagues by replying that there's no such thing at this date of world's history in America as an independent press. You know it, and I know it. And there isn't one of you who dares to write your honest opinions, and if you did, you know beforehand that it would never appear in print. Now, I'm paid weekly for keeping my honest opinions out of the paper that I'm connected with. Others of you are paid similar salaries for similar things, and any of you who would be so foolish as to write your honest opinions would be out on the streets looking for another job. And if I allowed my honest opinions to appear in one issue of my paper, before 24 hours, my occupation would be gone. The business of the journalists is to destroy the truth, to lie outright, to pervert, to vilify, to fawn at the feet of mammon, and to sell his country and his race for his daily bread. You know it, and I know it. And what folly is this toasting an independent press? We are the tools and vassals of rich men behind the scenes. We are the jumping jacks. They pull the strings and we dance. Our talents, our possibilities, and our lives are all the property of other men. We are intellectual prostitutes. Now, these rich men behind the scenes are the movers and shakers of the Global 2000 program and the New World Order. They're the men and families like the Windsors and Rockefellers, the Bushes, the Bundys, the Carnegies, the Vanderbilts. That's why I contend that it's time for us to wise up and start listening more to the God of Abraham and stop following after all these crazy scientists and philosophers and preachers and politicians. And let's prepare to live through and survive this New World Order and Global 2000 insanity. Now, if you'd like to learn more about Global 2000, Bible prophecy, and this New World Order, why don't you call and order my free 4-hour compact disc package? It's educational, it's entertaining, it's informative, and best of all, it's free of charge, and you can call and order yours right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to the email. Just go to our webpage, georgegordon.org, and click onto the email. It's even easier. And then send your email request. Why don't you do it right now before you forget? Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. Well, for more than 5 years, and in some regions as long as 7 years, there's been a drought, specifically in the western United States. But it's not limited just to the West. It has now come to the Midwest. There have been some bouts of drought in places like Texas, Oklahoma, and Florida, up the East Coast, in New Jersey, and North and South Carolina from time to time over the last decade, but primarily, the worst part of the drought's been going on out in the West. And while in some areas it has rained and alleviated the drought, in other areas it hasn't. And then in some cases it has rained and then it stopped raining again and the drought continues. Well, in Leviticus chapter 26, verse 4, God said that he would give us rain in due season if we would practice his law. In Deuteronomy 28, verse 12, he said the same thing. That's two statutes. And It covers the three big events in weather, and that is either you get rain in due season or you don't get rain in due season. That's simple enough. That's two. So if you're getting rain in due season, then you get the right amount. If you're not getting rain in due season, then one of two things is occurring. You're getting too much or not enough. If you're getting too much, then you've got a flood, and if you're not getting enough, then you've got a drought, because you either have the right amount of rain or you don't. You know, it's one or the other. And I've noticed now over the last 50 years that in more and more locations around the country, we're getting more rain than is called for, such as Hurricane Katrina, or not as much rain as we're used to, as we see in the Colorado Basin. So let's take a look here at this subject of drought, and let's see, is this driven by God, or is it just driven by happenstance and evolutionary caprice? There's a low flow in the Colorado River Basin, and it spurs water shortage discussion among the seven states that share in the Colorado River water. The reservoirs in the Colorado River system provide a cushion in times of trouble, much like money in the bank. But about half of the rainy day water savings have been spent during the past 5 years of drought, spurring water managers in Arizona, New Mexico, and the five other states that depend on the Colorado River to seriously discuss how they might share any potential shortage. The main issue of contention is that Glen Canyon Power will be unable to produce electricity by 2007 if the drought continues unabated and no changes are made in management decisions. At full capacity, the company uses Lake Powell to generate enough electricity to power about 1.5 million homes, including users in Arizona and New Mexico. Now, we don't know if this is a five-year drought, or if it's the fifth year of a 15-year drought, explained Robert Johnson, the regional director of the Lower Colorado region for the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation, which tracks and distributes Colorado River water. From a management perspective, we've got to hope for the best and then plan for the worst. Johnson displayed his optimism during a recent talk at the University of Arizona's Water Resources Research Center, and he noted that the reservoirs can store about 60 million acre feet, which is about four times the Colorado River's annual average stream flow. Mainly, it's stored in Lake Powell and Lake Mead. Both of these lakes lie along Arizona's borders. Now, what that means is that we've got the ability to weather drought. In fact, we have weathered drought. And we've had five consecutive years of drought, and the reservoirs are still half full. But at the end of October, Lake Powell was filled to 38% of its capacity, while Lake Mead was registering 54% of its capacity. However, the USBR numbers indicate only about 12 million acre feet could be jointly withdrawn from the two reservoirs before power production ceased completely, assuming no changes to the generating system and no additional water deposits beyond that for downstream use. Tim Henley is the manager of the Arizona Water Banking Authority, and he found some reason for hope in that historic droughts affecting the Colorado River Basin tend to last from 4 to 6 years, based on instrumental records of stream flow since 1906. In October, storm fronts, including in northwestern Arizona, finally broke the nearly five-year streak of below-average monthly precipitation tallies that the Bureau of Land Management had been reporting for the watersheds that feed the Colorado River as a whole. Colorado River flow throughout the system averaged 9.9 million acre-feet a year since 2000, which puts average river flow during this five-year period even lower than during the 1950s drought and others of similar 4 to 6 year time spans. Meanwhile, the 7 western U.S. states and 2 Mexican states using Colorado River water consume about 96% of the annual average river flow. An acre foot is roughly 326,000 gallons of water. That's enough to supply an average family of 4 for about 2 years. There have been media reports that Lake Mead in particular might never refill, even if stream flow returned to its average of 15.1 million acre-feet a year, an estimate based on measurements since 1906. So in the next couple of decades, basin-wide water consumption is expected to grow with the population of the upper basin states to reach the full allocated 16.5 million acre-feet from its current 14.5 million acre-feet a year. Now, between 1983 and 1986, we spilled about 45 million acre-feet of water into Mexico. So if you see events like that, the reservoirs are going to go empty, Henley said. Henley, one of 2 Arizona representatives in ongoing discussions among the 7 U.S. states vying for Colorado River water in these days of pending shortage, reported ongoing progress on interstate discussions during a November 9th public meeting at the Arizona Department of Water Resources. Their headquarters is in Phoenix, Arizona. Well, the interstate group is essentially hoping to buy time and work out interim agreements on how to share the shortage in the hopes that the river hydrology will shift into a more plentiful mode before they have to seriously weigh whether to short Arizona users or lose power. In an official shortage, or if an official shortage were declared, in the lower basin, non-Indian agricultural users of Central Arizona Project, the 336-mile-long system of aqueducts that delivers about 1.8 million acre-feet a year to Maricopa, Pino, and Pima counties, legally would take the first cut. About 80% of Arizona's share of the Colorado River goes to agriculture. Now, the ADWR director, Herb Gunther, reminded the approximately 75 people attending the Phoenix meeting that long-term records based on tree rings and isotopes indicate modern records might give an exaggerated version of normal stream flow. He said, "We're concerned that we're returning to a more normal mode rather than a shortage mode," Gunther said, alluding to the evidence that the Colorado has been running high for most of the instrumental period when compared to the longer records of past climate over the past 800 years. Now, did you catch that one? The Colorado River in average terms runs about 15 million acre-feet of water a year. Right now it's running at about 5 million acre-feet. Over the past 5 years it's been running at about 10 million acre-feet. That's a year. And here comes one of the experts along and he says, "You know, we've been measuring this thing for 100 years. And it looks like we've been measuring it in the 100 years of abnormally high water flow rather than average water flow." Meanwhile, back on the farm, Americans are moving into states like Colorado, Southern California, Arizona, and Nevada. And those states are growing in population to such a degree that if the water flow were to return to what we're calling normal, 15 million acre-feet a year, Lake Mead would never fill up again because we're using more and more water for more and more population growth. Now, isn't that a dilemma? Now, furthermore, in 2007, if the drought doesn't abate in the year 2006, which it doesn't appear that it's going to because as of right now, February 2006, snowpack in the Rocky Mountains in the Colorado Basin is again below normal. It's been below normal for several years. Fortunately, over this past 5 years, because Lake Mead and Lake Powell were full of water, we've been able to get by. And that's the objective of having this big reserve of water, because in low-yield years, you've got this cushion that you can rely upon. Good thinking. We should probably have more dams, and we should probably have more reservoirs. Of course, environmentalists want to tear down the two that you've already got. Meanwhile, back on the farm, out here in the real world, there are millions of people that make their livings or depend upon that water to live where they're living, because without it, they wouldn't be able to live there, like the Anasazi Indians back 500 years ago. When the drought came over a protracted period of time, it destroyed their civilization. There have been civilizations of Indian peoples or Native Americans who have lived in the desert southwest of the North American continent, the United States, over the past 3,000 or 4,000 years, and we see evidence of them coming and going and coming and going. Could it be that the American presence is about to leave? Let me bring to your attention these two statutes, one of them in Leviticus 26 and the other in Deuteronomy 28. In Leviticus 26, here's God speaking. He says, if you walk in my statutes and keep my commandments and do them, you know, if you practice my way of life, if you do things the way I tell you, I'm going to give you rain in due season, and the land shall yield her increase, and the trees of the field shall yield their fruit. And your threshing shall reach unto the vintage, and the vintage shall reach to the sowing time, and you shall eat your bread to the full and dwell in your land safely. Now that sounds like rain in due season. That sounds like that perhaps this fellow Johnson got it right when he said, we've been measuring over the last 100 years. You see, 100 years ago, 200 years ago, we Anglo-Saxons, we Americans here in the United States practiced more of the law of God than we do today. And we're practicing less and less of it. And we're getting more and more uppity. As you can see by Hurricanes Rita and Katrina, we got a little bit more than rain in due season. And as we see out in the West, we're getting a little bit less than rain in due season. It looks like it's pretty logical to me that in that period of time, from about 1850, when we began settling the West, until recently, we practiced more and more of the law, and God gave us rain in due season. In fact, He gave us more than we probably would have gotten under ordinary conditions. And in later times, that is, say, from the 1950s on, we've been practicing less and less of the law, and in the 1950s, we had a pretty substantial drought. In fact, the low precipitation years ran from 2000 to 2004, that's 5 years, from 1953 to 1956, 4 years, from 1988 to 1992, that was 5 years, from 1959 to 1964, that's 6 years, and from 1931 to 1935, that was 5 years. Now, let me give you the numbers. Back in the 1930s, in that five-year drought, the average annual flow of the Colorado River was 11,400,000 acre-feet a year. It's just rounded off to 11 million. In the 59 to 64 drought year, it was the same, 11,400,000, or about 11 million acre-feet a year. In the 1988 to 1992 five-year period, it ran at 10,900,000, or about a half a million acre-feet less. In the 53 to 56 period, it was 10,200,000. That was a little less. And then in the last 5 years, it's been running at 9,900,000. 9,900,000. But as of just a few months ago, it was running at 5.4 million on an annual basis in October. About half of the 9,900,000. Now, that was the last number that I saw on it. God, that ought to send chills up everybody's spine, because the average now from 1906 to 2006 has been about 15.1 million. 15.1. And it's down by about one-third over this last five-year period of the drought. But there's more to the story. In Deuteronomy chapter 28, verse 12, he tells us essentially the same story. And he says, if you practice my law, now I'm going to give you these benefits. And then he said that it will come to pass that if you shall hearken diligently unto the voice of the Eternal your God to observe and do all of his commandments. Notice the term, do all of his commandments. I wonder if that includes the fourth commandment, the Sabbath, which I command you this day, that the Eternal your God will set you on high above all the nations of the earth. Well, we Americans can say that we collected on that benefit. We were, at one time, the world's number one creditor nation, the world's number one industrial nation, the world's number one military power, the world's number one economic power. I mean, there was a time when America was set on high among all the nations of the world. That's no longer true today. We've been on the slippery slope since the 1950s, but this slippery slope is getting steeper and slippier as we get down closer to the bottom. Now, in verse 12, he says, the Eternal shall open unto you his good treasure, the heaven, to give the rain unto the land in his season, and to bless all the work of your hand, and you shall lend unto many nations, and you shall not borrow. Now, we have discovered since about 1980 that America, in the last 25 years now, has been borrowing more and lending less. Now, there was a time when we lent to other nations and we did not borrow. Now we borrow and we do not lend. That's not good. And notice that in that same verse, he connects this with rain. Rain in due season. And again, rain in due season only comes in two forms. You either get enough or you don't. Now, if you got enough, then that means that you didn't get too much and you weren't flooded out, or you didn't get too little and you were droughted out. Now, I'm in Missouri and we're in a drought here in Missouri. That's practically unheard of. Now, there have been some periods when there's been some shortages of rain. But, I mean, we have 114 counties in this state, and nearly all the counties in the state were short rain, not everyone, but nearly all, and some of them as much as 14 inches this year, including our county here. Now, we normally get about 50 inches, round numbers, every year. And so, to us, 50 inches of rain in due season. If it's 40, it's a little short. If it's 55, then it's a little over. But if we get between 40 and 55, you know, pretty regularly, that's not too shabby. In other words, if we got 40, we get by quite nicely. But now when we get around 50 and then it goes down to 36, we got by, but we didn't get by very nicely. And if we had another drought next year, like this one, we have some springs here on this farm that have never been dry, that will be dry by this time next year. Now, we haven't seen that here since the 1930s, when we had a drought come through the Midwest. And there was some short years here. But even in those short years, we didn't have the springs go dry. And I got a spring down here below the house that normally has water in it all the time, and it's dry. And other farmers around here are reporting that they've got wells going dry. I had one go dry. I have a spring down here that went dry. And we're not in a full-fledged drought. I mean, we're not really, you know, we're not really suffering like they did back in the 30s. So either you've got enough, or you've got too much, or you don't have enough. And if you don't have enough, we call that a drought. So when this drought begins, you know, it doesn't result in there's no rain at all, period. It's less rain than normal over a long period of time. Now, if it got down to where it didn't rain at all, then we wouldn't be able to stay here. But when we don't get enough rain, we don't get enough hay. If we don't get enough hay, then we can't keep as many cows. If we can't keep as many cows, then it impacts upon our standard of living. A man that keeps 100 cows lives better than the man that keeps 50. A man that keeps 50 lives better than the man who keeps 25. And if you're used to keeping 100 or 200 cows, and all of a sudden you can only produce half as much hay to winter them over, and it's a 50% hit on your standard of living. You know, that adds up. Now, between 1983 and 1986, and that was in a three-year period, we sent 45 million acre-feet of water. Now, that's the equivalent. That's the equivalent of a three-year supply in the Colorado River down to Mexico. See, the Mexicans are entitled to some of that water also. So if you take 83, 84, 85, and 86 in a four-year period, the water that runs down the Colorado River is used, and then it runs back into the river, and it's used, and then it runs back into the river. Less and less of it is available. It gets down to Mexico, and the river is practically non-existent by the time it gets into the Gulf of Lower California. Now, ADWR Director Herb Gunther reminded the people there attending the Phoenix meeting that long-term records based on tree rings and isotopes indicate that modern records might give an exaggerated version of normal streamflow. An exaggerated version of streamflow. You see, when they use dendrochronology, they go to the tree rings and they start looking back 500, 1,000, 2,000 years. There's some trees called pinyon pines. And they find out that the rings get a little bit bigger, you know, when there's more water flow. And so they watch it in modern times and they just extrapolate it back. They seem to think it's pretty accurate. And they're looking back 1,000 to 2,000 years, and they're coming to a conclusion that, hey, wait a minute. We have, over the last 100 years, had higher rainfall than we had 500 years ago or 1,000 years ago. So tuck that one away in your heart. And keep in mind that people are moving into Las Vegas, Nevada. They're moving in to Phoenix, Arizona. They're moving in from California to Colorado and making higher and higher demands on that river water going downstream. You know, at some point in time, I imagine, we'll just take it all and tell the Mexicans that, well, it's too bad for you, but we're upstream and we're bigger than you are. So we're just going to take it all. And you guys get nothing. Now, that's a thought. Well, he says... In fact, some note that the 1955 strong El Nino event that helped boost Colorado River streamflow to about 22 million acre-feet that year could be seen as an unusually wet year during a drought that actually stretched from 1953 to 1964, an 11-year event. However, even a couple of wet years like 57 and 58 within a stretch of dry years would do little to alleviate potential problems from the current drought, as researchers discovered when they modeled a long-term drought by adding the stream flow values for 53 to 64 to the current record. And although the lower basin states theoretically could receive their full annual allocation during such a scenario, it would come at the cost of Glen Canyon hydropower. Glen Canyon. You see, in the modeled worst-case scenario, Lake Powell's levels would be too low to yield electrical power for 10 of the next 17 years. You got that? 10 of the next 17 years. Now, a lot of power comes out of these big dams. And, you know, 1.5 million homes, that dam up there probably would supply a city like Phoenix. Now, there's only so much power in the nation, and we're running a little short of power. Do you understand that? Nationwide, the power grid system is already operating at nearly 100% of capacity. And we haven't built any nuclear power plants over the past 30 years. You remember that? Yeah, people have said we don't want these nuclear power plants. And you'll notice that gas-fired power plants and oil-fired power plants are getting more and more expensive because the price of oil isn't $10 a barrel anymore. It's 6 times higher now than it was when we were building those plants. And now the price of oil is 6 times higher at $60 a barrel. So just taking a Glen Canyon dam offline is going to have some pretty serious repercussions, even nationally. When you take out a city and the power need next year. Remember, 2007, if this continues on, which it apparently is going to do, by this time next year, Glen Canyon Dam might not be producing any power at all. Well, hang on, folks. I've got to bring you a little reminder here. And that is that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law and agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from a scriptural perspective. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, please go to our homeschooling page. That's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour website is updated weekly and has our radio log schedule and archives. Now, The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, economics, history, health, news, and current events 7 days a week. And the Law Hour offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call the law school and ask for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call the law school direct at 417-273-4967. Well, Lake Powell's levels would be too low to yield electrical power for 10 of the next 17 years, as Don Ostler of the Upper Colorado River Commission summarized in a report available on the website for the ongoing Arizona-Colorado River Shortage Workshops. Lake Powell takes most of the swings of the drought, as the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation Johnson noted. Lake Powell serves as the collection site for annual contribution from the Upper Basin states, New Mexico, Colorado, Utah, and Wyoming, to the Lower Basin states of Arizona, California, and Nevada. After generating power through Powell's Glen Canyon Dam, the water is channeled to the slightly larger Lake Mead. Glen Canyon Dam's power intake pipes are higher than the pipes that can supply water to the lower basin. As it is, electrical production is down to about 900 megawatts from its potential capacity of 1,300 megawatts, in part because the lower reservoir level means incoming water exerts less force on the turbines that generate power, explained Leslie James. He's the executive director of the Colorado River Energy Distributors Association, I guess that is. If push comes to shove, providing water to the agricultural uses takes priority over providing power, according to one of the many legal agreements guiding Colorado River use. And also, legal agreements have been interpreted as requiring the upper basin states, which produce about 90% of the runoff that feeds the Colorado River, to pass along the water allocated to the lower basin states, even if it means shorting its own users upstream. The lower basin states have always received at least the full 7.5 million acre feet allotted to them, Johnson noted, plus half of the 1.5 million acre feet promised to Mexico as part of a 1944 treaty. But now some upper basin state managers are challenging the need to deliver the usual 7.5 million acre feet, pointing out that legally they must deliver 75 million acre feet every decade, and arguing that lower basin tributaries should contribute to Mexico's share. One potential bargaining chip held by the upper basin states is that a shortage of power would hurt the lower basin states as well, beyond increasing the cost of electricity to those who normally depend upon Glen Canyon power sources. The utility provides about three-quarters of the $130 million basin fund revenues, some of which goes to protect endangered species, according to Osler's report. So Arizona and New Mexico have more than a passing interest in reaching an interim agreement with the upper basin to avoid the need for official and therefore heavily regulated action. Now, additional coverage of Colorado River Basin issues can be found in other University of Arizona publications, including Arizona Water Resource, available on the web at www.agarizonaedu. Now, water managers share a range of viewpoints on the outlook for Colorado River water supplies. Do forecasts of El Nino winter temperatures and precipitation, snowfall, and water supplies bode well for water managers down in the Southwest? As with so many things in life, it depends upon your perspective. Is the glass half full or half empty? A variety of viewpoints about future Colorado River Basin water supplies were in evidence at a recent interagency briefing held November 9th in Salt Lake City, Utah. According to Tim Ryan of the Bureau of Reclamation, Lake Powell and Lake Mead were at only 38% and 54% of live capacity as of November 7, 2004. Lake Powell hasn't been this low since 1970, just 6 years into the 16 years required for the reservoir to fill after completion of the Glen Canyon Dam. And the Bureau sees the low levels as indicating successful water management because the system was designed to have low water levels during times of drought. And there's no question that the basin is, in fact, experiencing drought. The 2000 to 2004 period has been the worst mid-range drought in historical records. Lake Powell had no above-average flows since September of 1999, until they finally reappeared in October of 2004. Even with above-average flow, there's concern about the runoff efficiency of the basin. While precipitation has been about 85% of average, inflows to Lake Powell have only been about 50% of average, and this results from soil moisture deficit, which Tom Pagano of the Natural Resources Conservation Service likened to high-interest credit card debts that take significant extra revenue to pay back. Soil moisture rose dramatically in parts of the Southwest with the extreme storms in October to levels usually experienced only during spring snowmelt. But the upper Colorado Basin notably missed out on that precipitation, and also short-term relief of surface soil moisture should not be confused with the long-term recovery to pre-drought groundwater, river flow, or reservoir conditions, according to Doug LeCompte of the Climate Prediction Center. Even the wettest winter on record in the region would raise the Palmer Drought Index, which is an indicator of soil moisture, he said, only very slightly. Now, the Colorado Basin River Forecast Center has been making early outlooks of Lake Powell inflows using their probabilistic forecast system. Their most recent outlook, computed November the 7th, gives a 50% chance of unregulated inflows above 6.7 million acre feet during April through July of 2005, but also a 50% chance of having lower inflows. That's higher than the 5.1 million acre feet outlook estimated in August, but still lower than the long-term average of 7.9 million acre feet. Notice these lower numbers here, boys and girls. We're talking about 6.7. Now notice that the annual average is 15.1 million. And now we're down to some months that the inflow is down to as low as one-third of normal, 5 million acre feet. That doesn't bode well. Now, that's admittedly projected for the whole year. We don't know what annual influx or inflow is going to be in any given month. There might be some big thunderstorms come along and drop a lot of rain. That's what we're all hoping for. But that's what the people of New Orleans were hoping for, that it would be a near miss, not a direct hit. Now, remember, in the back of your minds, that God said, I will give you rain in due season if you obey my commandments and you practice my law. But what happens if we don't obey his commandments and we don't practice the law? Has it ever occurred to any of us that he might withhold the rain? That he might not give us rain in due season? You know, a deal is a deal. And if I contracted with you to put in a kitchen, and let's say in the terms of the contract, you said that you wanted number 10 wire put into the walls. And I know, and you know, that the National Electrical Code only calls for number 12 wire. But for whatever reason, you said you wanted number 10. And so I come out and do the job, and I forget to tell my electrician, and he puts in number 12 wire. Now, I finished the job, and it's been inspected, and it's been passed, and you get a new certificate of occupancy. But you go over to one of the wall outlets, and you take off the cover, and you point out to me that that's number 12 wire. And I point out to you that, yes, it's true that our contract did, in fact, call for number 10. And I don't deny that. I mean, it's right here in black and white, and it's right there in the contract. But I also point out to you that number 12 wire meets the National Electrical Code, and that just because I made a mistake and forgot to tell the electrician to put in number 10 wire isn't any reason why you should withhold payment from me. Now, you're sitting there with your checkbook in one hand and the wall cover plate in the other hand, and the contract sitting on the counter, and you look at me and, well, what are you going to do? You're going to give me the rain in due season even though I haven't fulfilled the contract? Or maybe you're going to withhold payment because I haven't performed to the terms and conditions that we agreed to? You know, I just throw it out for your consideration. Now, they're talking a lot about global warming. Have you noticed that over the last 10 or 15 years? And everybody is blaming the United States of America because we put about 25% of the CO2 that goes into the atmosphere every year into the atmosphere right here in America all by ourselves. The other 75% goes in from everybody else around the world. And I haven't heard anybody make an observation that could it be that God is giving us the warmer temperatures? Now, I wouldn't deny that automobile traffic and factories and electrical generation is probably throwing gasoline on the fire, but you know, all of the pundits blame us, or they blame man, or mankind, or commerce, or trade, or they blame industry. Nobody has ever given any thought to God Almighty, the Creator, at all, who said, I'll give you rain in due season, or I can give you Hurricane Katrina. And I can give you rain in due season, or I can shut off a third or two-thirds of it. So I'm kind of thinking that maybe global warming is caused about 99% by God and maybe 1% by man. Has anybody ever thunk of that before? I mean, it just could be a wild new thought for you to think about. He goes on to say there may be some cause for optimism. Based on the weak El Niño declared earlier this year, El Niño is sometimes correlated with increased winter precipitation for the Southwest. But as Klaus Wolter of the Climate Diagnostic Center stressed, El Niño has many flavors. This event's ocean temperature patterns are quite unlike the 1982-83 or 1997-98 events that brought wet winters and high water supplies to the Southwest. In fact, the hope of El Niño may turn to pessimism when looking at similar El Niño events in the past. One analog includes the dramatically dry winter of 1976-77, and others suggest a drier winter is more likely than a wetter winter unless the El Niño strengthens rapidly over the late winter and spring. Another concern is the strong trend of warmer winter temperatures that can decimate snowpacks and dramatically reduce subsequent river flows, like in March of 2004. A pragmatic perspective is to consider how to avoid the worst consequences if Colorado River flows and reservoir levels continue to be low. Lake Powell is unlikely to be refilled in 2005. But El Niño watershed conditions and climate outlook should be monitored and reconsidered in a couple of months before taking any irreversible actions. Well, it isn't a crisis until you go to the water faucet and open it up and no water comes out. And boy, that's going to be a shock. So let me describe it to you. I just went through that shock. We have a well here for many, many years. It produced enough water, but didn't produce any surplus. Enough, but no surplus. Now, in 2005, we noted that in January of 2005, we got above normal rainfall. 2004 was normal, but January of 2005, we probably got three times the normal rainfall that we do in January. Then the rain shut off, and normally we get rain right up through June. June, the wettest month of the year. And that carries us through July, and then we get a few thunderstorms in July and August, and that tides us over to September when the fall rains come. And then in September we get rain, October, November. Then it stops raining, and then in November, December, and January we get snow. And then February, it melts off, and then in March, April, May, and June, we get the spring rains. Well, last year we didn't get those spring rains. And because of that, we got a hay crop in May, but then we didn't get summer pasture in July and August. And I was feeding hay in July, if you can believe that, feeding hay in July. We got some rain in July and August, which gave us some moisture, ground moisture, and we got some grass to grow. And in September, we got a little bit of rain, and then it stopped raining in October, November, and December. So we didn't get any fall grass, so we were feeding hay again in October. I think I started feeding in about 15th of October, which I normally start about the 1st of December, sometimes as late as the 15th of December. So I ran out of hay the other day. I had to buy another two loads of hay, which wasn't enough, and now I got to buy another two loads. Now, I want to describe this to you, because if I live through it, then you need to get ready for it, because I think it's going to happen to you too. In fact, I think it's going to happen nationwide. Because in Matthew 24, he said, I'm going to make it rain on one place, and I'm going to withhold the rain on another place. And you're not going to know where the rains are going to be or where they're not going to be. But here in the Midwest, we've got fire in Oklahoma and Texas. Fire in the wintertime in Oklahoma and Texas. Yesterday, we got a fire alert in the whole 417 area code. A fire alert. The humidity dropped to 25%, and we're in drought conditions, and we have the potential for forest fire in Missouri, for crying out loud. In February. Can you believe this? I'm just reporting to you what I'm experiencing. Now, my well over here, which used to produce enough, got to where it wouldn't produce enough, so I had to drill a new well. So we drilled one well, and we filled in the old well, and when we got all through over here, now we have enough rain. But, you know, if this were to continue on, then we get a drought here like you get out there in the West, where you people out in the West are used to dry conditions. We're not here. And if we don't get our 40 inches of rain every year and it drops down to 30, which is on the border of getting down to semi-arid, or it got down to maybe 20 inches, which is arid. I mean, could you imagine our rainfall dropping in half in Missouri, Indiana, Illinois, Kansas, Nebraska? Hey, boys and girls, that could get real serious real fast. And that's going to affect your standard of living, and it's going to affect mine. Now, there's another story in here, and I'll just pass this one on to you here, which is dealing with the Missouri River. The Missouri River, which is a pretty good sized stream. It's at record low levels, if you can believe it. The Missouri River at record low levels. And then I've got a couple of articles here on the Anasazi and the Pueblo Indians, and what happened to those Indian tribes down in the Southwest when their rain dried up, or when the drought overtook their civilization and destroyed it. I'm looking at drought information here for Missouri, and I see down here in my region of the country, well, it's 114 counties in the state, and we got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 counties that had above average rainfall. Five. Then we had one county in the state that had above average rainfall. That's that one that had above average. Oh, I gave you the wrong sequence here. Let me back up. One had above average. Five had 14 inches below average. 14 inches. And then right next to it is 10 to 14 inches, and that's our county. 10 to 14. And I'm in that 14-inch range down here. And then it goes on up. And of the counties that had normal rainfall, about one-half of our state had normal rainfall or above, and about one-half had below. So I want to report to you that here in Missouri, drought is something that we don't hear. I mean, that isn't part of our lexicon here in the Midwest. Now, the Army Corps of Engineers said on Tuesday that it's not going to change plans to release extra water into the Missouri River this year, despite concerns that the spring rise will put Missouri farms and the barge industry at risk. You see, the agency's final operating plan for the river calls for a release of 2 spring pulses of water from upstream reservoirs in March and again in May to help revive an endangered fish called the pallid sturgeon. See, the river's been running so low for so long now, several years, because of upstream drought in Montana and North and South Dakota, that it's beginning to affect us because we're the last state along the Missouri River. It empties into the Mississippi, you know, over here in the, near St. Louis. Well, but the releases will happen only if a lingering drought leaves enough water in the reservoir system. Current forecasts show enough storage capacity for the release to occur, said Paul Johnson. He's a spokesman for the Corps' Northwestern Division office in Omaha, Nebraska. The 2-day pulses are supposed to mimic the historic rise of the river with the melting of mountain snow before the dams were built. The increased water is intended to encourage the pallid sturgeon to spawn. Environmental groups generally support the plan as the best way to protect river wildlife. But Missouri Governor Matt Blunt has threatened legal action, and he calls the science sketchy and says the pulses could flood thousands of acres of farmland along the river. Now, Senator Kit Bond, Republican of Missouri, also challenged the practical effects of the plan. Not one official has suggested that this will lead to recovery of the species, Bond said, and the final plan announced Tuesday is almost identical to a proposed plan announced October the 24th, and since then the Corps officials considered hundreds of written comments and heard debate at 8 meetings in cities along the nation's longest river, which runs 2,700 miles from Montana to the Mississippi River. Now, the Corps developed a plan under orders from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to protect the pallid sturgeon as required under the Endangered Species Act. Corps officials have spent more than a decade meeting with farmers, navigation interests, environmental groups, and state representatives to balance competing interests along the Missouri River. Well, I'm about run out of time, so I'm going to make a couple of comments here before we finish, and we'll pick it up right there when we come back next time, but it would seem like to me, as we'll see the next time we take a look at the Missouri River, is at an all-time low right now. All-time low. The drought has affected the Missouri that way. Do you really think that it's wise to open up the floodgates and to waste that amount of water over a fish? Well, you know, the environmentalists say, well, of course we should. But What about the cities and towns and the farms and the ranchers and the people that rely upon that water to irrigate their fields and for the drinking water that they get in their homes? I would say that you should be thinking about the waste of the water in addition to the pallid sturgeon, don't you? Especially in the middle of a drought. You really think you want to waste any? Well, we're about out of time, so I'm going to have to leave it right there. You've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. For more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening. And good night, friends.